I had said to God, Lord, if this is what you want us to do, if you want us to be a part of this, then I just pray that you'll make a way, because I really shouldn't be spending the money right now.
This is the South Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 18 years has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated nearly 5 million square feet of self-storage nationwide. With the help of his incredible team at SouthStorageInvesting.com, who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self Storage Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Myers, with my special guest, Christina Myers. And this is a part two of our interview and the sharing of our journey and our transformation, if you will, from burnout landlords to entering the self storage arena. And, you know, for those that had missed part one, it may be helpful to get a little more background and context by listening into part one. But either way, you're a fly on the wall and listening to Christina and I talk about our journey and how we got into this incredible industry. And so we pick up from where we left off, and that is discussing, you know, how we got into the education side of the business, how we went from investing in self-storage to getting into starting and launching the country's first and largest self-storage organization. And it didn't really happen by design. I shouldn't say didn't really. It never was on our radar. There was nothing that we had ever anticipated. At the time, I was running the Central Indiana Real Estate Investors Association. I was the president of that organization and part of the board for a number of years. And Christina was very involved within the organization as well and helping me to run roundtables. And we found that as we began to get more involved in self-storage, there were more folks that were talking to us and asking us about our journey and how we got started and where do you find them, how do you fund them, and all types of questions about the business. And many people were inviting me out to lunch to pick my brain, if you will. And then there were too many people asking for that. And then it got to the place where my calendar was booked with these lunches, and then people began asking me to pay for the lunches. So we said, enough's enough. And so we held a workshop on a Saturday and did our best to give these folks a good head start into the business. And what we found is that it was wildly successful. And then as the head of this organization, we brought into, it was a REIA, Real Estate Investor Association, and there are a number of speakers that would come into the REIAs around the country on the national circuit that would get paid to sell a home study system. And then they would split the proceeds with these not-for-profit organizations like ours. And the agent for these speakers heard that we were holding these workshops and teaching people about self-storage, and there wasn't anybody teaching it at the time, and said, hey, I will help you put together a presentation as well as a home study system and a product to be able to sell. And if you're interested, you know, I could put you out on the road and you could go speak at some of these organizations. And that was somewhat interesting to me because I was the one who wrote the checks to these speakers when they came in and sold these home study systems at our group. And I saw that for a 90-minute speech that they were paid very well. And that would be a good way to get more exposure for our group and then also for our investment group as well. And so we did. We spent a year running a home study system and putting together a presentation, and this agent put me out on the road, and it was wildly successful. And what he had put together and the messaging that he taught me how to present and the information, it worked well. So I can't give too much credit to myself other than the fact that we were in the business and there was nobody doing it at the time. And then it really took off. The second year, we were very busy traveling around the country and speaking into different groups. And then that evolved into people wanting to then have us create a 3-day boot camp, or an academy, as we called it at the time. So we created a 3-day boot camp, and then folks wanted mentoring and assistance and coaching to go along with that. And before we recognized it, we were holding these 3-day events 4 to 5 times a year and offering mentoring and coaching programs and building up a staff and a team of folks. And we found that we now had 2 60-hour-a-week jobs, and that was one in investing in real estate and the second in teaching people how to invest in real estate as well. And so I'll pause there and now ask Christina, is that the way that you saw it, or what would you add to the story?
Yeah, I think when it all started, it was exciting and it was fun. And yet, you know, from a family standpoint, it certainly took Scott on the road and away from us more. So there were some hard pieces to that as well. But it was certainly the start of, as it began taking off, we realized, once again, there wasn't anybody doing this. And at the time, people were not yet quite sure. Those people that were in self-storage knew it was a great asset class. Those people that were not were still a little, maybe not sure of the asset class in the situation. So I think we started small purposefully, which was really good, but one thing led to another. And I think it was maybe at our very first academy that somebody said, hey, what about mentoring? And it just hadn't occurred to us. We knew that was a model because we had seen it through the RIA we belonged to. We had seen that other speakers did that. And so we knew that was a model, but it wasn't one of those things that we were intentionally trying to do. But one thing led to another, and it led us down that path. It wasn't long after that, though, that we began homeschooling our kids so that we could go on the road with Scott, because it was a lot on our family. When he started traveling a lot, he really started traveling a lot. So there was good and bad to it, I guess.
Yeah, there was never really, a desire to do this. It was never in the plan and really set out to do this, other than it just kind of happened organically. And as we were beginning to pray about and search, our own thoughts and feelings as to whether this is something that we wanted to do, we began to see, like ourselves, the life change that occurs when people began investing in self-storage and what that meant for them and their lives. And they were seeing that same transformation that we saw. And that is, the hectic life and not so thankful life of the landlord and dealing with all the hassles of the tenants and toilets and trash, which really became our moniker within the education side of the business, is how to invest in self-storage without all the hassles of tenants and toilets and trash that we see in other forms of real estate. And then that just kind of solidified the reason to move on, and that this truly was our calling, and we were being called into the real estate mission field to help others to achieve success and then to get out of some of the challenging situations that they were in and perform that life change. And that's kind of what I guess drove us or at least kept us on this path when we could have stepped back or stepped out of this, except the fact that we could see that we were truly being a part of and having a hand in some life change from these folks that were able to recapitalize their investment in retirement accounts where they had lost it in other asset classes or during one of the two recessions that we've been involved in over the years, or that they were able to bring a spouse home from work, or that they were both able to quit their jobs, or whatever that meant for them, just additional walking around money or just a safety net. This truly was what self-storage brings. It was just it's really neat to be able to see how other folks were being able to just follow our processes and having somebody come alongside of them and be accountable to making that change.
Well, yeah, and I think even that very early on was when those people that we mentioned in the first part of this podcast began to come into our lives, and they were so excited about it. It made us more excited about it, and it also brought those people that just truly have become like family. It began to bring those people into our lives, which is another whole unforeseen piece that never occurred to us. It never occurred to us that we would have these people that truly we love very, very much.
So in the very beginning, it was just you and I in these academies teaching these with me talking about the investment part of creating the messes and you following up with the business practices and how to clean up those messes and bring some semblance and order to the best business practices that we've then begin teaching people. And you were clearly the star of the show. Everybody wanted to hear from Christina. So what were the questions that were asked of you, and more specifically, from some of the other wives or significant others that you have continued to answer and run across over the years?
I think at that time I was doing a lot of the behind-the-scenes management. I wasn't doing as much hands-on management, but a lot of the behind the scenes when it came to the software, when it came to collections, when it came to bookkeeping, when it came to auctions, those types of things I was watching that, you know, with our own facilities happen in the background. So with the academies, then that's part of the, those are a lot of the questions. That's part of the piece that I taught people during our academies. And then, yeah, those were a lot of the questions that came in. And I think for me, I learned so much hands-on by being there when people were gone and not able to be in the office. I learned in our facilities that way so much that the questions came much easier to me to be able to answer that management piece because I'd done a lot of the hands-on management piece at that point in time. So I got a lot of those. I got a lot of the bookkeeping questions at that time. I was also teaching people to do real estate bookkeeping kind of as a side for me. And so there was a lot of those kind of questions that came through. As I said in the last one, one of the greatest questions was, what did self-storage bring to you? And hands down, without a hesitation, I said time, because it was very different to have that time back in our lives that we didn't have with the single family houses or apartments or things like that. So I think those were a lot of the questions that I got. I think, you know, it still continues to be one of those questions about Scott and I in business together, which we've kind of always done from the very beginning. So that those were some of the questions, I guess, as well.
So I remember very early on, as we were, you know, continued to create these different modules and improve upon, you know, the education side of the business, as we took a look at the mentoring side of the business, you know, you had made it known, who said that if we're going to do this, if we're going to go heavier into this, and then it can't be like what we've seen and what we've experienced or witnessed with other real estate education programs. And that was really a kind of lack of concern for the success or care for the success of the folks that come through. And unfortunately, that's what we had to witness. And that was our experience, is that there were many folks out there that were receiving payments and mentoring folks, but didn't really care for their success. At the end of the 6 weeks or 6 months, sayonara, good luck, and hope you do well, without a care for that. And so very early on from the beginning, you know, our programs were created and with nothing but the success at the heart of the programs, and putting a guarantee in place that we would continue to work with these folks to coach and mentor them until they got into their first self-storage facility or achieved the goal of developing their first self-storage facility, whatever that is that they set out to, and whatever program that they were in. And that really set us apart from the other education organizations out there. And really, for a while, we became the black sheep, because other folks were saying, hey, you're kind of putting setting the bar a little, the mark a little too high, not only for yourselves and giving us some advice, but also for the rest of the folks out there. But that commitment that we had made to our folks from the beginning, which stays in place today, is, I think that it clearly has been what has set us apart and allowed us to achieve the success that our team has achieved in the mentoring side of the program. Is that the way that you saw it?
Yeah, and I think some of those questions that especially came from why guys that were wanting to invest and wanting to spend money on mentoring or wanting to spend money on consulting or things like that. Those questions became easier because, number one, we were seeing successes over and over again. And number two, we were going to walk with them. You know, we would walk with them until they got into a facility. And granted, they were going to do the work, but we were going to walk alongside them and make sure that happened. So those questions became easier, knowing that, you know, many times there was a wife that would call or a wife that would stop me at an academy or things like that, that say, my husband wants to spend this money, I'm not comfortable with it. But we were seeing the successes. So yeah, I remember so many of those that now, I mean, we could name success story after success story. So
that then led us to starting the nation's first self-storage mastermind program. And that was, I guess, looking back on this, there were a number of our successful students that said, okay, so what's next? You know, we got into a deal and, you know, how do we stay plugged in? How do we stay involved? And I didn't really have an answer for that. And we felt, well, mission accomplished. You know, what do you need us for at this point, except for to learn how to grow and scale? And then when we took a look at our own organization, our own growth, I was a member of a couple of masterminds in real estate, but clearly there wasn't one in self-storage. So I thought, well, why not? Why why wouldn't we be the ones to start a mastermind program and fill it full of the people that we want to have in the room? You know, I think anytime you join a mastermind, or if you're looking to learn and be a part of a group of folks that are doing the same type of business or industry that you're in, clearly you don't want to be the smartest person in the room. Otherwise, you're not growing and you're not learning, and it may not be a good use of your time. And so, you know, we stack the deck. We put the nation's A players in the room so that I can learn from them, and so that we could all grow together. And people from all walks, from the private equity side of self-storage to development to lending to acquisitions. And, you know, we hand selected a number of folks to launch this, and we did a trial, and we put eight of us in a room at Planet Hollywood in Las Vegas prior to the Inside Self-Storage show that year. And really, first of all, asked questions of the folks and said, you know, those of you that raise your hand and are here that are interested, what do you want this to look like? And again, most folks have said that, well, we want this to look different than the other masterminds that are out there in real estate. And most of those were really just an extension of, you know, a three-day academy, or at the time, the mastermind name had been thrown around. It was just a new, you know, attractive, sexy term that the real estate community was using to just repackage their three-day boot camps. And we said, well, no, we're not going to be and do that. You know, this is going to be an elite level of folks that have to be in the business. They have to be operating at a certain level with a certain dollar amount and volume, and that this is exclusive. It's by invitation only, and that you have to pass an interview by myself, which means that, you know, first of all, we check your credentials and the criteria to be part of this group. But secondly, is that we need to know that, you know, that you're a go-giver, and that means that you are going to give in this group, and that this is not like an academy where information is sent out to you from our organization, but you, the members, are going to present, and that is going to be the crux of this group, and you're going to share business practices that you've learned since the last time we got together, the over-the-top ones, not just fluff, and then you're going to bring the most difficult challenges that you can't take anywhere else to your spouse or to your business partners, because many times those challenges are about your spouse or your business partners, and you can bring it to this group in a confidential setting and to be able to lean on the experiences of those that have been through this before you. And those that are in the room can't give you advice. They can only speak from experience. And so that is the framework that we started from, truly following the Napoleon Hill mastermind principle in the Think and Grow Rich. And again, the principles that we've adhered to this day, and to this day, I'm very proud of the fact that we have the nation's most thriving self-storage mastermind that I walk away from every time with pages of notes, because I continue to learn because of the folks that we put in the room that we attract, and to see tenfold to your point, Christina, now the relationships that have developed within this mastermind of folks that are doing business together, that are doing life together, that are vacationing together. One member, his estate is, the executor of his estate is another mastermind member. It's not his spouse. It's another mastermind member to make sure that it is executed properly. And that's just the level of trust and the richness and how deep these relationships have grown within the mastermind. And, it's just so cool to be a part of this. And just the moderator, I'm just the puppet master. I have nothing to do with the content or can take credit for it. It is, the members.
Yeah. And I think when the mastermind started, we had kids that were involved in lots of activities. So that early on, there weren't too many of those that I attended, only because we were in theater and basketball and horseback riding and all kinds of things, soccer and all those things that took lots of our time. And so I was running back and forth to practices. Once in a while, I'd get a grandparent that would come and hang out with kids so I could go and do that. But Those were fewer and farther between until the last few years. And by then, our mastermind has really grown and developed in the last few years to be just really some incredible people, incredible as well as very credible, and people that bring a lot of value to our business, to each other's businesses. So I think I skipped a step where we were, you know, starting the mastermind because I was at home a lot when Scott was gone. And then now to step back in and see just some incredible people in the room. And we have just learned so much from all of them. So that's just been beneficial to everybody.
So the business, the investing side of the business, began to evolve as well. And if you run a good mastermind, you attract capital partners, and you attract folks that will bring deals to you as well. And through the years, we knew that if we were going to grow the business, everybody runs out of cash, and cash is the fuel for the business. And if you are going to grow and scale, then you have to find outside sources in terms of private equity. And so we went somewhat kicking and screaming into that, wanting to just grow on our own, not take on partners, not take on the liability and the risk of not only the credit risk, but the risk of an investment. And if something should go south, you know, what that would mean, and, you know, the consequences of our private equity partners coming alongside of us and failing on behalf of them. But then we finally got to the place where we were losing deals, and we recognized that if we didn't have the cash, then we wouldn't be able to take advantage of these deals that ran across our desk. And so very quickly, we realized that we needed to evolve into a financial services firm that deploys capital in real estate. And so somewhat of a shift, and that's what we have now become. And that, you know, we got very good at identifying deals, and our students in our mastermind and our mentoring programs and elsewhere that had seen or heard me speak from stage at the Inside Self-Storage trade shows or the SSA shows were bringing deals to us to partner in. And our role was to raise the capital for them for those projects, and then be able to get an equity piece in those by way of bringing that and maybe some best business practices and the occasional contribution of our balance sheet as well. But then as that evolved and we began raising capital on deal after deal, that's when we recognized that, this is a shift and this is truly a new business. And so that then also, which I'm thankful for and grateful for, you know, fell on your lap as well and on your desk to bring a semblance to that and to make sure that we are in compliance, and then working with a whole new set of attorneys as well as folks on the books side of the business to make sure that we really had to now dot our I's and cross our T's. And so I'm thankful to you for that and to the place that we are right now. Otherwise, we never would have grown to the place that we are and to be able to be involved in and to help so many people.
Yeah, I love to learn. And I think all of those were new aspects of learning for me. But I spent lots of hours sitting with accountants. I didn't want them just to do it. I wanted to understand what they were doing. And early on, we had an accountant that would sit with me and explain for hours on end so that I understood what was going on. So when we moved into this realm, some of that was more obvious to me of how this fit together. Some of it wasn't. I still probably would defer to Scott when it comes to the actual investment pieces. But the compliance, I understand completely. The bookkeeping, I understand completely. The financial pieces of what the investors need to see or what they need to do, those pieces I understand completely. Just from a learning perspective, to be able to sit down and learn all those pieces and bring that to the table. And those were things too that we got some experience, a little bit of experience early on when we tried out having equity partners, even in our apartment realm, you know, even in that early on beginning piece. So we tested it out in smaller areas, and then as that evolved and we got better and better attorneys and CPAs and things like that around us, advisors and all of that. I can't say enough about that. It is not, I say to so many people, please don't decide to use your buddy from college that is a CPA. It will be wrong. It will mess you up. It will put you in a bad place. Just because somebody's a friend or somebody's your hometown CPA does not mean that they understand commercial real estate and syndications and investment and all of that. So it is worth your time to find somebody who is credible in those areas. And so those were good learning things for us and good ways that I learned how to interview a CPA and learned how to interview and know what they knew by the answers to their questions. And so those pieces are invaluable to us when it came to those places that we needed to make sure that our investors were covered. So thank you for saying that, but it certainly was a pleasure to just learn and grow in those areas as well.
I would say that that is a topic for another whole podcast for an hour as to the importance of that. And I think we have had a couple of podcasts. And so we'll put those links in the show notes as well as the importance of having the right partners in place, the SEC attorneys and the CPAs that have worked with private equity deals and private equity companies. Yeah, we can't say enough about that. But I also am I'm thankful that the folks asked and that we recognize that, you know, just like the approach that we've taken with really every facet of our business is not to go fast, but to take a step back and make sure that we build the right team in place, because we felt all along, no matter what, you know, we have to put our best foot forward, because in today's world of social media transparency, you know, if we don't do right by a student, then, you know, very quickly, very easily, you know, everybody on Facebook and on Twitter and LinkedIn is going to know that Scott and Christina Myers and their organization doesn't do what they say they do from an education standpoint and from their company and their claims. If we do not provide the returns and or the communications, or if we don't do a good job as the syndicators of these projects that we got involved in early, then we wouldn't have the opportunity later on to be able to start a fund. And we've now launched three funds, and to be able to take those investors that came along with us early on that were rewarded very well, and they wouldn't continue to, you know, invest with us repeatedly over and over again if we wouldn't have had those partners in place and done it the right way to begin with. And it wouldn't have attracted the joint venture partners who brought us some fantastic development deals and other projects that we had an opportunity to participate in that we didn't find on our own, but that we saw as great opportunities that we took ourselves, that we had the opportunity and then took our partners along with our investment partners along with to be able to be rewarded handsomely. And over the years, we've had some incredible opportunities and some incredible projects. There's always the one or two that where we missed the mark. But overall, for our investors, the returns and the percentages that we have provided on average to our folks far surpasses most out there in the industry, and I can say that we're very fortunate to be in that position just because of the approach that we've taken. You know, also early on, you know, I say we went kicking and screaming into this. You know, I'd seen a number of partnerships that that did not work out very well, you know, in our asset class as well as others for various reasons. And so for that reason, we didn't want to take on, you know, joint venture partners and then limited partners for fear that something would go south and we'd be responsible for that. And then our reputation would be damaged and we couldn't do, you know, essentially the three businesses that we had. But, you know, that there, if our reputation were tarnished, then there goes our education business, there goes our investing business and our mastermind and, you know, anything else that we touched in this realm. And so, you know, we took a very slow, methodical approach to this. And that, again, I believe has served us well. And we learned a lot from some gray-haired folks that we asked some hard questions of, who said, I asked, you know, why would you take on partners? And tell me, you know, what was it like in the beginning when you looked at bringing on partners? And tell me about, you know, ultimately how you arrived at that decision. And many of them said over and over again, we would never be in the position that we are right now, or I would never be in the position I'm right now had I not taken on partners. And I tried to do it all myself and tried to go slow and maybe either keep it all or recognize that I needed to have control. When you find partners that truly have complementary skill sets, you know, that is when you then together can go much faster and much farther. And so it is that advice that that allowed us to be able to get into the syndication side and then ultimately the funds that we find ourselves in now, which has catapulted our growth.
Yeah, I think there's been some great deals and some ones that we went, okay, we could have done some things better. But for the most part, like, we've stayed really consistent in what we've been able to do in the investment realm, which I think is probably really rare from what I've seen in others, that we've stayed really consistent. We've certainly had ones that were incredible home runs, and those have been awesome to see, and I hope to have many, many more of those. But in general, I mean, we stay at a very 30-plus IRR for our investors, and we have been very successful in doing that and haven't altered what we were doing from the very beginning. Even our first, what I would consider our first real syndication till now, it has remained very consistent and steady in those areas, so.
Well, speaking of partnerships, husbands and wives working together in a partnership. Let's just focus on that piece for this podcast. Since you are here, what would you say are the keys to husbands and wives working successfully as partners, as business partners?
I would say that early on we learned, and we learned the hard way, that there were areas that we needed to define what's yours and what's mine. And when I knew very quickly when I stepped over the line of what was not mine, there were things that I had to say, okay, wait, that's not mine. I have to back off, because otherwise it got too muddy. It caused relational issues, those types of things that we didn't want. So if we clearly defined what was yours and what was mine, then it worked. It just worked so much better in that. And I think that happened early on. I mean, remember our kids were very small and we had houses and apartments, probably our first apartment complex. And that became very clear that our places had to be, this is yours and this is mine, and allow the other to do that. So.
Yeah, the advice given to us by attorneys when we began to take on other partners in the business, you know, spilled over into Christine and I's working relationship, and it is just that. He said, you need to have an operating agreement that clearly defines the roles and responsibilities, and there's no gray areas. You have a set of responsibilities for this partner and a set of responsibilities for that partner, and anytime you begin to get sideways or somebody begins to get into the other person's sandbox, you just revert back to that operating agreement. And that really, it should, you know, squash any conflict and be able to allow you to, you know, resolve any issues before they become an issue, because you can point back to this living, breathing document, and it works, and it worked. We see that in many, many relationships. And, you know, it's real easy to just refer back to that and blame it on the attorney to just say, hey, I appreciate your viewpoint. However, stay in your lane, bro. You know, we agreed that this is your space and this is my space, and we make decisions collectively, and you can provide input, but this is how this is going to work. And again, in the partnerships that we got involved in, that has worked very, very well, as long as everybody agrees to stick to those ground rules. And I'd say that has worked pretty well. And not 100% flawless, but that has worked very well for us in our business relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that. And communication sometimes are just, as in marriage, take a step back and think about it and, you know, write it down, whatever you need to do before you talk about it and bring it up, because it compounds the fact that what we say and how we say also affects our marriage. So we have to be really clear on what that looks like. And so some of those same things that apply in communication in marriage also apply in communication in business between a husband and wife as well.
So the lines do become blurry, and the discussions at the dinner table of, honey, how was your day today? Well, you mostly know. And so it's a continuation of what that looks like. But how do you set the boundaries? How do you feel that we set our boundaries, and what kept, you know, our pillow talk to be personal rather than a business? I'm sure many people that are either looking to, you know, create a business with their spouse or already in it, want to see how other folks have done or are doing it.
You have been especially good about setting the boundary that when it came to dinner time, it was dinner time. And there was a hard stop so that we spent time together. And still today, when most nights we don't have any kids in our household that are having dinner with us, there's still a hard stop on what was the day and what was the workspace, and it's dinner time and we're going to enjoy our time together, and we're not going to let that bleed over into our dinner and our evening and our conversations. And I would say you especially were so good at, and still are, at really helping define conversations that took us away from work-related items and just conversation that was personal. And if something came up, then let's stop and put it in our calendar for tomorrow so that we can circle back to that issue, and let's take care of it tomorrow. If it didn't have to happen this evening, if it didn't have to happen during our after hours time, then we're purposeful about putting it on a schedule for tomorrow, or sending ourselves a quick email to say, find a time that we can talk about this this week, or whatever that was. I think those are all boundaries that we've had to learn to put in place. There certainly have been exceptions to that rule, but that is for sure the thing that changed the trajectory of how that works, that it doesn't bleed over into our personal lives.
Well, thanks for that. And that wasn't without help from Strategic Coach and Dan Sullivan's programs, because as the entrepreneurs out there in Storage Nation know, 24/7, 365, we could be on doing business. And that was kind of an intervention for me very early on in our investing career to recognize and follow his program to say, 5 o'clock, you shut it down. And weekends are weekends, and you schedule your vacations in that time first. And that was almost foreign to me at that time. And still I struggle with that. And that's where, even though I can shut it down at 5 o'clock for dinner time, that one's easy. I still forget about the vacations. And it was just yesterday when we were in the car, when I'm thankful that you brought up, hey, we need to schedule a vacation before this year gets away from us, and before next year gets away from us, now that we have basically adult kiddos. Otherwise, every day is a work day, and we'll get through the end of the year and wonder what happened. And so it takes two to be accountable to each other and to schedule that time first. Otherwise, yeah, we know our business can consume and fill in, you know, like sand in the glass full of rocks. It can fill in every corner and every crevice of our time if we allow it, if we don't put those hard stops and those boundaries in place. And so that has to be a dedication that the two partners, the two business partners that are significant others and or married, you have to put in place. Otherwise, it can get away from you. So people also want to know perhaps how a husband and wife communicate. How do we operate? You know, so what would you say has been the key to effectively communicating, making sure that we're still spending quality time in addition to the business, other than what we had just mentioned, and just really, I guess, staying grounded and focused on the important things, focused on business when in business and focused on each other when we're outside of that. Any hacks or tricks or tips that you'd want to share with folks out there as to how we've been able to manage that over the years?
I think there's, certainly our cutoff of saying this is dinner time and this becomes personal time is part of that. There's also those pieces. It's hard as an entrepreneur to, on vacation especially, to stay away from emails and things like that. And so I think we always set a time in the morning, because Scott's an early morning riser. And so for him, we always set a time that said, okay, you're going to work, be done by 9 a.m. or whatever, so that we can go out and do something as a family. You know, if you've got to work, you know, a little bit on Tuesday or a little bit on Thursday on vacation, just let's do it before this time so that we still have time together. Because some of that does have to happen. It's really hard as an entrepreneur to really just get away. And we've got so many things going on. So it's definitely hard for us. So some of those kinds of things have helped us be connected and focused. We continue to prioritize date nights for us to stay connected. And those are not nights where we're talking about business. And at the same time, we can also continue to operate in silos within this business. So there are definitely times where I feel like I say, get me on your schedule, because I'm probably the one that doesn't end up on his schedule more often than not. And so there's times when I say, get with your assistant, get me on your schedule, because there's some things you and I need to go over. And I think when we were operating in the same space or the same office, that was also, you know, it was easier to go and say, hey, what do you think about this? But it also interrupted your day. And so that's another boundary or tip, is to say, you know, I just keep my notes. I keep my ongoing list of things to discuss with Scott. And then if something feels urgent or my list has gotten long enough, then I'll say, okay, get me on your schedule. Let's have a real live meeting where we can go over some of these things. And that's purposeful. And it's not during our personal time. It's during our work day and those kinds of things. So I think that helps with communication too, because otherwise I'll find myself frustrated. Wait, I never have time on your calendar. We end up having to talk about it during dinner or during a personal time. So we just have to set that priority aside.
And I can't speak for everybody, but I think that it may be the default for husbands and wives or significant others that are in business together, that they just assume that, well, we'll talk about that when I get home, and I'm always with this person, so we'll be able to talk about it then. But, you know, if you are truly practicing, you know, good, spending good quality time and setting boundaries, then that shouldn't. And so as impersonal as that sounds or seems, you know, if you've got appointments back to back, either one of you during the day, and you're not making time for the other who's also a part of the business and needs time with you, you do have to schedule it or have your scheduler schedule time. And there's nothing impersonal about that. And, you know, I need to apologize for it. You know, what's worse is if it doesn't happen. And then there's some resentment and animosity by the other person because they feel as if, you know, the other person doesn't have time for them. So it's no different. You know, business is business, and you run the day that way with your spouse, who's your business partner. So that when you get home, it doesn't bleed into that, but then still making time. So, you know, I think we would be remiss and addressing what happens if spouses have conflict within the business. And even though you and I have never had any conflict in the business outside of that, maybe we want to take a stab at addressing that. So you first.
I want to back up just a little bit if I can. One of the things that we did really address in being grounded and connected and focused is that I think, and I don't say this for any guilt on anybody else, but for Scott and I, it's very important that we each day there's time that we spend with God. That's just part of our routine. That's part of our life. And, you know, we're called biblically to renew our minds every day. And that's really important that our mornings start out like that. And so I would be remiss in not addressing that to say that that is part of our lives and part of what keeps us on the right path and guided in the right way. So I just felt that was important to say.
Yeah. Thank you for reminding me that and not moving on without that, because I need him every day to be grounded and also to rely on him throughout the day. That being the knucklehead that I am, I would screw this up without God intervening and stepping into those decisions in which I allow him to come into as well. And so he gave this business to us, and we need to be good stewards of it, and we need to show him that each and every day. And it starts by going to him to say, how can I be a good steward of what you've given me today and the people and the resources that you've given to us? And so 100%, you know, our success and the decisions that are made and the path that we take is led and guided by him. He opens doors and closes doors, and it's just up to us to be obedient and to follow.
And I think that goes along with the resolving conflict. When it comes to conflict, I think that those are those times that, and believe me, we don't do it perfectly. But if we stop and we go to him first in the midst of the conflict and we address our own selves with him prior to addressing the other person, it makes a world of difference in the way that our conflicts work themselves out or are worked out. And that's been huge. That's a learning curve that we're still continuing to learn, and we certainly didn't understand early on in our marriage. But that is a learning curve for us, and resolving conflict is not just us resolving conflict, although it involves us taking the step of initiation to do that. But it is leaning on him first.
And I would say, if we continue to look back at, and I'm hyper aware, both of us are aware that many times these conflicts, these challenges, these issues that crop up aren't really of us or from us or as a result of the business. From the beginning, this business was set out for really, we had two goals in mind, and that was to be able to provide a business that gave us time. To be able to spend time with our kiddos and to be able to raise them in a manner in which we weren't afforded to have time with our parents growing up. It was a different time and different circumstances, and we wanted to be there for them. And two, we wanted to be and plan to be a mission-focused business that included our family. And this gave us the time to be able to and the resources to be able to go off on the mission field with our kids and to be off the grid, you know, for weeks at a time, if we were able to, and if we were called. And so from the beginning, we recognized that if you have a big mission like that, and you're going to do some good in the world, that there's going to be opposition to that, and the evil one's going to want to get in the way of that and make messes and create conflicts to keep us from succeeding in doing so. And so that is also, I think, kept us grounded in our conflicts. If I could combine two of our questions together and recognizing and realizing that helping us to recognize there's something more powerful at work here than just the two of us and the petty little conflicts that we find ourselves in that all of a sudden become gigantic for no reason at all. So speaking of the focus and the DNA of our business being mission focused, how did that all start? How did the evolution of that start, and how did the business become the platform to be able to fund that?
I think we always had on our mind that we were going to do a mission trip as a family, and it just we kind of put it off for a while, and then the kids came to us one day and said, "There's a mission trip." We were involved in a homeschool co-op. And so they said, there's a mission trip at school and our friends are going and we want to go. And at the time, it wasn't a time, financially, it wasn't a time we should have been just spending money to go on a mission trip. It just didn't completely make sense. But the kids wanted to go. And so I said, yes. And then I said, Scott, I kind of already said yes to these guys. And I said, is there any chance you might have frequent flyer miles in your account? And he said, no, my travel's probably been booked with the frequent flyer miles. And I said, well, can I just check? And I had said to God, Lord, if this is what you want us to do, if you want us to be a part of this, then I just pray that you'll make a way, because I really shouldn't be spending the money right now. And I looked in Scott's frequent flyer mile account, and I kid you not, to the dollar, enough for five people to fly to do this mission trip. And I was like, all right, Lord, I said I wanted it, if it was meant to be, that you would make a way. And he did. And so it was life-changing for all of us. That was our first house bill. We had done a smaller mission trip with our church before, but it wasn't nearly as impactful as this. And so it was incredible, life-changing for all of us. The stories, come on a mission trip with us and you'll hear more of those stories, but it's been very, very impactful for our entire family. And, so as we began doing that, or as after we got home from that, Scott said, I want to do this. I want to take, colleagues and other people that work with us, staff, mentoring students, people that come to our mastermind. I want to take them with us. I want to do this with all of our people around us. And we were surrounded by people that have a lot of money and don't know how to give back and what that looks like. And there isn't a family-friendly mission trip out there to do. And this was one of those. And so I said to Scott, I said, that sounds crazy, because I just said we shouldn't have been spending the money for the plane tickets to come on this trip, but God made a way, and it was incredible to watch what happened to our business and the people that attended, and all of that was just absolutely incredible to see. So it just became part of what the Myers family does at that point in time.
Yeah, and we didn't. I didn't know. I didn't see a way as to how we were going to make this happen, other than we committed to tithing corporately and setting aside 10% of our profits from all our businesses to be able to put it into a fund, a kitty, if you will, until we had enough money to be able to take these people on the trip and pay for it. The goal was to continue to pay it forward, the model that was presented to us. We paid for those plane tickets, but the rest of that mission trip was paid for by the sponsor. They paid for the house, they paid for our housing while we were there, and the whole programming fees and food and everything. And I said, I want to do that, but I don't know how. He knew. And so we committed to that, and our business took off, and our business has thrived as a result of that. And so we knew that, this is something that he was going to continue to utilize us for. And 30 houses later, we never would have thought that we'd be at the place where not only are we doing two trips a year and building 3 to 4 houses, but as you mentioned, that so many of these partners that come alongside of us that have the ability to do the same, that the ripple effect came into play. And now they are out bringing their friends, family, partners, coworkers on these mission trips and following the same model and contacting you and asking you and spending time with you to find out how that's done. And so thank you for mentoring them and showing them how to do that to make an even greater impact. And, you know, for the future, certainly I hope and I foresee, and it's not my plan to see how it unfolds or to control, but I certainly hope that at some point in the near future that we're able to get to the place where we flip the script and that 80% of our time is on the mission field and 20% is continuing to move the business forward so that it does continue to throw off enough cash and resources to be able to provide the opportunity for more people to go on these mission trips.
Yeah, and we've just been so blessed to be able to take so many of the people that are working closely with us, and whether it be people that work with us, for us, vendors, mentoring, people that are mentoring with us, people that are in our mastermind, kids, friends. It's just been such a blessing to take so many people with us. And these groups that come along, a lot of times they're just saying, okay, you're doing this. Can we just come along with your group? We'll pay for our house. We'll pay for our people. We'll just come along with your group. And that's been incredible too, to see other people come along with us and just be part of what we're doing.
And we really could continue on and have an entire podcast with regards to our mission efforts, and perhaps we will, but I'll just leave with this. And that is for all the incredible stories, not only the ripple effects that we've seen, but for all the incredible stories. Not everybody has life-changing experience when they come on these trips, although we've witnessed many of those. We've seen people come to Christ on these trips, and sometimes led by our son, who decided to ask, and to see that some of these folks have reconciled with their families as a result of going on this trip and had a life-changing experience that has brought a family together that was crumbling and falling apart. For them to recognize and see, you know, what is more important in the world is not the electronics and not the toys and the lavish vacations. And, you know, some of those folks, I'd say, at least a handful of these parents have asked their kids, you know, what has been the best vacation you've ever gone on? And they said, remember that time we went on vacation in Mexico and built a house? And only for the parents, much to their chagrin, state that, well, you know, we've spent tens of thousands of dollars on other vacations around Europe and cruises. For them to say that this was the best vacation they've ever been on, which is a trip that was funded by somebody else, that was truly a mission trip. But that is important. And to be able to provide that that opportunity and that experience for folks and to see the change that is happening and to be able to, and never losing sight of the fact that, you know, to see when we hand the keys over to a deserving family that would never have an opportunity to be able to buy a house and the life change that occurred and to break that chain and that cycle of poverty in that family. And doing that one trip, one family, one house at a time is, to be the hands and feet and to be able to participate in that. There's really no greater feeling. And each and every time we leave, I cannot wait to get back to Mexico to be able to experience it all once again with folks, especially for the first time, for folks that are experiencing it for the first time.
Which I guess is a good transition into what's next for us. And I hope that looks like more of that. We spend a lot of time with these missionaries in the place that we go and love them to pieces. And so spending more time with them, spending more time breathing life into them and being a part of what they're doing. We hope that is next or in our future for us. It's been an incredible life change for us to be able to walk this path and see life change for others and the missionaries that make that possible as we go down each time. So,
and lastly, I would say for those of you that thanks for listening and to our hearts for missions, and it really only started by truly finding our purpose. And, you know, that's different for everyone. And if you've never thought about what you're really here for and on this earth, then I suggest you read Rick Warren's book on the purpose-driven life to find out, you know, what is your purpose? If you don't know what you're here for, and if you've been blessed with many resources and you're already financially successful, but feeling as if there's something a little bit more, then spend a little bit of time leaning into and praying about that to see what it is. Because making an impact and a dent in the universe, whatever that looks like for you, but being able to leave behind the legacy of life change for others that may not be able to recognize that without your help, There's really no greater feeling than that. So I would just invite you to look into that. All right. So as we head into 2024 and beyond, what are you most excited about for this year?
This year, it feels different as we will have all three kids in college this year. So in one facet or another, from beginning college to a master's level. So and with all adult children, it frees up my time to spend more time with Scott and traveling to see some of those children, traveling on business trips, being more a part of things within the business that I haven't been able to be a part of, as well as just spending some time with other family and friends and people in our lives. So it's a different place that if you've got little kids at home, you finally do get to this place where you've got some freedom to do some things that you've probably been wishing you had the freedom to do for a long time, but we're finally there. So that feels good to be more a part of those kinds of things and able to spend time with some of those people that we've lost a little bit of contact with. So yeah.
Yeah, 2024 certainly is starting out differently than 2023. And the goals this year for myself, and as Christina mentioned, was restoking and rekindling some relationships and having the time and the freedom to be able to do that as our schedules have freed up a little bit. Still traveling with business, but being able to take Christina with us. But then also 2023 being a very difficult year for us personally with the loss of a very dear friend and two aging parents. Our entire year was spent grieving and picking up the pieces of all of that, and did allow for the things that we typically and are already enjoying and taking advantage of this year as well. And so, this is a rebuilding year, if you will, from the relationships that were somewhat neglected and left by the wayside due to the events of last year. But excited about this industry, as always. Self-storage does very, very well, no matter what the economy is doing. And as we head into a challenging economic time, I'm very excited about our prospects and where we're at with the opportunities that we have in front of us right now, which is going to be nothing but a fantastic year. So bucket list items, as we look forward to either this year or in the future, what's on the bucket list? What are you looking to check off this year or in the future?
Wow, we get to go to Hawaii this year. That's been on the bucket list, so I'm excited about that.
Yep, absolutely. Looking forward to Hawaii in the future. Bucket list item for me has always been to go to the Monaco Grand Prix. And this year had an opportunity just by happenstance to be able to take my daughter to a Formula One race. This is her senior trip, and she actually chose to go to a Formula One race halfway around the world. And so we were able to experience that, which was pretty cool. And also in the planning stages, not this year, but for next, we're already talking with the kids about where they want to go in the world to be able to take a family trip with the five of us. And so we'll leave the voting up to them. Of course, we always have the ultimate veto, but looking for family stages are looking forward to an incredible vacation with all of them to be able to go to an epic place of their choosing. For the business, at least for myself, we continue to talk about slowing down. And of course, we don't believe in retirement. There is no such thing as a retirement. That is not biblical. However, we will slow down. And I'm getting excited about some of those things and maybe slowing down to spend more time on the mission field and doing some of those other items and travel and other things that we have been putting off perhaps over the years. And so looking in the next 4 to 5 years of handing the reins over to some of the folks that we're grooming within our organizations right now to be able to take over the reins, which will allow us to do that. And so those steps are already taking place right now.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to at our age, and having raised our kids and seeing success in the business. We'll continue to always do what we're doing, but maybe in a little bit less... less hours, less fashion, perhaps. Looking forward to, as Scott has said, just more time spent on the mission field, more time spent doing things with family, and continuing. We'll always continue with this asset class because it's incredible and it's provided a lot for us. So we'll continue in that manner. But looking forward to the years to come, just the two of us.
All right. So as we wrap up, first of all, thank you for spending the time to come on our podcast and to be interviewed and maybe ask some personal questions that you may not have expected to be asked. But beyond that, anything else that you would like to share about our journey or our story that maybe that you'd like to share that may be of benefit to Self Storage Nation?
I can't think of anything else I want to share. Thank you for having me. Thank you for listening twice. For those of you who listened to part one and part two, that was an honor to be able to share our story. And we're always open to questions, and we're always open to things that if you have the same kind of working relationship and want to know other things about how we do this together and what that looks like, I'm very open to sharing what we've learned and how it works for us. So thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
Yes, and I will say the same. Thanks so much for listening to our journey, and we hope that this was helpful perhaps to some of you that that are either spouses in the business or looking to get into business with each other or planning to be spouses and that are already in the business with each other. And if you think this was helpful, or if you know of anybody else that this may be helpful for that you would like to share these episodes with, then we encourage you to do so. And so if you have any other questions for Christine and I that you would like to send as a follow-up to this episode, the email address is in the show notes, and we would welcome those questions and be able to answer those for you. And if you think that this is an encouragement for anybody else that is in business together in the same fashion, that we would also encourage you to forward this to them to listen to as well. So with that, once again, thank you, Christina, for spending time with us. And thank you, Storage Nation, for listening to our story and our journey. And we hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you on the next episode. Take care.
Hey, gang. Wait, three things before you leave. First, don't forget to follow the Self Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram. And don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit follow on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us.